I'm Robin, obviously. You might have worked that out. But can I move the music? Is that going to... I can't do the singing, you see. So that would be really cool.
Thank you very much.
So let's just put that there. And how are we doing on time? There's no clock, is there? So, oh, yeah, it's too far away from me. I'll use this. That's cool.
Whoa, what's going on? It's collapsing. Oh, that's it.
That's good. Thank you. All right, we'll just get ourselves sorted out. Talk amongst yourselves.
Is this one working? Brilliant, Max. Yeah. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Well done, Max.
Nice one.
No pressure, but I have warned you beforehand. Get it right. Okay.
I think I'm going to start.
Yeah. Are you going to get in the way of my notes? Doing that, you are. So can you not do that? Thanks.
I'll not have a stand then.
Yeah.
That's fine, I'll just put this here.
Yeah.
We just want to say how wonderful this is. Just a real honour to come back looking out and just seeing some very familiar faces, which is just really a real treat. I said to Chrissy earlier when I saw her in the lobby bit, she hasn't aged at all. Has she done that in 7 years? She did say that I hadn't aged either, so that was quite a good compliment back. I'll take that. But just to say, it's a real honour to come back after, we're here really to share a little bit about what's been going on for us as we moved to Swansea quite some time ago. So let's just have a little look. So we're here and we're going to share a bit about what's going on currently for us in Swansea, but also get you up to speed in terms of the journey that took us to where we are at the moment. You've probably heard, and I think it's been on your Facebook page, a bit about Matthew's house and the hill. And so I thought probably at the beginning it's just very helpful to bring some clarity as to what is what. The hill is the church that we moved to Swansea to plant 7 years ago. And Matthew's house is the building where we meet, but really it's the initiative of the Hill Church in Swansea. And let me tell you a bit more about the project, the Matthew's house project, because that will become very relevant. It's a building that was on the high street we managed to purchase, and it really is the aim of the Hill to bring hospitality and hope to people in the heart of the city, the heart of Swansea. We have, from that project, we have 70 volunteers working with us, the majority of which do not know Jesus. So they are giving their time and their talents to partner with us to see something amazing happen in the heart of Swansea. We've got several expressions of hope and hospitality at Matthew's house. One of those would be the Homeless Period Swansea, where we provide dignity packs for vulnerable and homeless women, providing them with sanitary and kind of cleansing stuff for them, particularly for those that are in refuge or maybe on the streets. Actually, it was interesting the other day. I think one of the guys overheard one of the ladies asking for a dignity pack and whether he thought he was just going to get a freebie. He also asked for one too. Tom gently took him to a side and explained what was in the dignity packs. But the really fascinating and heartbreaking thing was the fact that he said he didn't know what the word dignity meant. So that's why he asked, because he thought he was getting a freebie. So heartbreaking stories like that too. Another one of the expressions at the Matthew's house is the cafe, which has had an awful lot of media interest. And even in this last week, the BBC were down there filming for a programme that they're doing on charities. So that should be coming out at some point. It's actually on heroes and villains. And I think we are being billed as the heroes, not the villains. We're often in the paper. And in fact, this week, a few of us are sleeping rough for Matthew's House, which was organised by our local, very popular radio station. So we've been chosen as one of their charities for 2018. So that's all very exciting. But the cafe is open 2.5 days a week. That is where the majority of the volunteers serve. And what we do is we intercept food destined for bins and put them in bellies instead. So it's part of a project which is reclaiming food waste as well. It's fascinating to know that we serve about 1,000 meals a month on a pay-as-you-feel basis. So those that can afford to pay, put whatever they want to in the box, and those that can't afford can still eat a really decent home-cooked meal. The food is pretty amazing. Also, it's worth noting that on Christmas Day and Christmas Eve, we were open and served 80 guests on between those two dates. So it's been really exciting to be part of something that we never saw this being part of our journey when we moved there. But whilst we want to love and meet the needs of the many guests that come into our home, the battered, the broken, and the bruised people of Swansea, it's actually had an incredible impact on those that are volunteering. Like I said, many of them don't know Jesus. And they themselves are vulnerable. Well, many different people are vulnerable from different backgrounds. And so I just wanted to share two stories, really, before we move on from this project. One of them I'm just going to read, and the second one is a little short video of one of our volunteers. The first one is a lady called Grace. And she said this: after my mother passed away, I struggled with grief and depression. I withdrew from my friends and family, and I isolated myself from the world. I became overwhelmed with everyday tasks and rarely left the house because of anxiety and panic attacks. I turned to alcohol and drugs to try and numb my pain and escape the reality of everyday life. I was not capable of holding down a job. It was during my recovery that I found out about Matthew's House and the wonderful work they're doing with the Matt's Cafe project, so I applied to volunteer. I thought I was going there to give something back to help people. It turned out Matthew's House helped me. It gave me confidence and a sense of self-worth. It gave me my life back. I fell in love with the work they do at Matthew's House. I felt like I belonged and I was part of the Matt's Cafe family, who were all so kind, loving and generous. Now I'm in university, studying for my bachelor's degree with a view of becoming someone with skills who can bless other people. I'm also working part-time in a fast food restaurant. None of this would have been possible without Matthew's House. They believed in me even when I didn't believe in myself, and for that I am truly grateful. Matthew's House is still a huge part of my life and will continue to be well into the future. All I can say is thank you to everyone at Matthew's House and Matt's Cafe. You are true superheroes. What a great story written in a woman's own words about the impact of the project. And now we just want to hear from Ben. It's a short video just about his experience at Matthew's House.
Hello, my name is Ben. Well, it's not really, but it will help me keep my identity safe. Although, most people will know me anyway if you know Matt's Cafe. Anyway, I'm kind of like a utility man, running maintenance jobs and just filling in wherever needed for Matt's House leaders, and I flipping love it. But it hasn't been like that for very long. I had a little bit of a rough start, and due to unexpected circumstances, I was adopted at the age of 4. Yeah, I mean, this was a struggle, but I made it. I grew up, I'm still here, and with the trials and the tests of life, in my mid-30s I found myself here in Swansea, without a home, without food, without a family. With only the coat on my back, really. This was in March 2017. Looking for support and help. Someone to put me up for the night. Just one night. And the challenge of life was still with me. One day I stumbled upon Matt's Cafe. It said, food on a pay-as-you-feel basis. I jumped right on that. The first day when I walked into this colourful and welcoming place, I took my chance and I filled my plate. A volunteer came and chatted, well, listened, really, and encouraged me while I was still thinking, what on earth am I going to do next? But by the end of that day, I managed to find a hostel to stay, which perked me right up. The second day I wanted to tell my new mates, the Matt's Cafe gang, so I went up and ate well again. It was the best cottage pie I have had in a long time. And the coffee is always a winner. Anyway, I told the volunteers what had happened and that I was temporarily housed, and then I asked if I could help out. That day I lent a hand doing the odd jobs here and there, and by day three, which was the following week, I was a volunteer. And not just a volunteer, but kind of like adopted again into my new and a little bit dysfunctional Matthews House family, with Mama Lynch heading it all up. Since I've been volunteering here at Maths Cafe, I have met so many wonderful, amazing people who I now see as my family, not just friends. I now help train up other volunteers, as well as helping three times a week, even with locking up. And hopefully, soon, I could be a key holder. I'm training to be a team leader too, where I can help guide and support other volunteers along the way. Just like they did for me, really. The only thing I can't do is cook like Mama Lynch. Mama Lynch is the glue that holds Matt's Cafe together. Then we have Tom, who is like the cheeky older brother. He's bossy, passionate, caring, and he just gets so much done. And then you have the annoying little brother, me. Now, I'm always winding up the gang and taking the mick. But I wouldn't be without this place. This place gives me a sense of purpose, a sense of being, and just gives me the chance to give something back. We do face some challenges with the work we do, and for the people that we try our very best to love. Well, a bit like me, really. But we face these challenges together, and every time, it makes us just that little bit stronger. This work and our family is a bit nuts, but it's a good kind of nuts.
Hey, that gives you a good view of the high street and the project, what's going on. So, it's not me, not you yet.
All right. I'm your wingman.
Oh, okay. So the question is, for those of you that didn't know, how did we get to Swansea? In a nutshell, very shortly, it was a combination of prophetic words and God speaking to us directly through the Bible over a period of time. And both are essential when looking to hear God and walk in obedience and step out and do something new. So for me, it was the bit in Hebrews where God spoke to Abraham and it said, by faith, Abraham went to a land that he didn't know. And that was very much part of our journey. And again, in Psalms where it talks about committing your ways to the Lord, trust in him and he will act. So there were verses that we held on to during that time of leaping into the unknown. It was very much an empty landscape. You see that project, we had absolutely no idea what we were going to be doing. We only knew that God had called us to go there. But the one thing, like it talks about in the Old Testament, is when God intervened in people's lives, or when he did something special, what they would do is they would build piles of stones in order to remember those moments. And so looking forward, as we left here and we went to Swansea, whilst it was empty in front, we could look back and see we saw piles of stones where in our own lives God had been faithful to us. So we knew that we had this track record, and we knew that we had no doubt that God would be with us as we were going forward. We always said that if we were going to write a book on church planting, because this is the third church plant that we've been part of, we would call it, we still don't know what we're doing. But actually, one thing we do know about is the importance of having values with which to build on. And that's what Robin's going to share about now.
Okay, cool. I've got this. I don't need it. Let's go. Well, it's funny, I proofread these banners. Like, I don't know if there's a spelling mistake in them, but I definitely proofread them, so I'll take the bullet for it if there is. And, you know, every church in one sense should have fundamentally the same vision. And at the heart of the gospel is a heart of for the poor as well. And in fact, when Paul's speaking to the church in Galatia, he's talking about the fact that when he went to Jerusalem and he was talking about reaching the Jews, or the guys in Jerusalem reaching the Jews, and he said, I'm called to the Gentiles. He said, the very thing we agree on is that we will reach the poor and we will look after the isolated and the marginalised and stuff like that. But I think for me, the vision stuff is always the same in churches, but every organisation, every church has different values. And I helped come up with these values, and they are brilliant. And the problem is with values, in the organisation that I work for, Care for the Family, we have three values, and I'm going to try and do this. Vulnerability, generosity of spirit, and honouring the least. But I kid you not, every time I get to number two, trying to remember number three is really hard. So when I look at Grace Church's values of 11, I can remember when I used to talk about them in years ago, you know, what are we talking about, 7 years ago now. I used to kind of, and I bet you'd all do the same, you kind of get to four or five, and then you can't remember the others. But, you know, I think that doesn't really matter. What I'd encourage you to do is look at these 11 values, because I remember there are 11, aren't there? Yes, there are. You've not taken any away. And I'd say try and adopt two and live them out. Adopt two of those and live them out. And if as a church you adopt two and live them out, the church will live out all 11. And that'll be a good thing, because this town needs those values. This town needs those values. And for us, and the advantage of church planting is whatever mistakes you made, you can leave behind. So really sorry about that. And you can restart. And it's a bit like kids, but you know, it's like you leave your other kid behind. You go, oh yeah, it wasn't quite worked. Out you go. And I'll restart with this one. And so for us, we had two values that we wanted to focus on. And the first value is we could have called it authenticity. Be authentic. But the problem with be authentic is over there, and most people are over here, which is pretending and performing, as I certainly am. I spend more of my life trying not to pretend and perform than over here. Authentic sometimes feels so far away from me. So we decided, which is not probably, if you read it in the books, it's probably not a good thing to do. We decided to have a negative value. In other words, we decided let's have a value of don't pretend, don't perform in the hill. And that is easy to say and incredibly difficult to live out. But when we live it out, when we exhibit that vulnerability, maybe the way that Care for the Family talks about it, when we exhibit that out, somehow it makes us friends. It makes us friends. A friend of mine said this: if you want acquaintances, tell them your successes. If you want friends, tell them your failures and your fears. In other words, don't pretend, don't perform, and be honest. And the other thing we have as a value, and I don't know whether we'll live it out today or not really, but we talk about using everyday language for everyday people. There's a bit, my favourite bit in the Bible, actually, in Mark 12, one of my favourite bits is, it's in the King James Version, it kind of uses the phrase, but it says this: the common man, the common people heard Jesus gladly. And for me, therefore, I've kind of taken it on as a value for me and a value for the church of saying, let's speak in a language that the common man can understand. You know, the Bible in the New Testament was written in common New Testament Greek. People who think somehow we're clever by quoting the Greek don't understand that the common man can barely speak English at times. I can't. And the common man needs to hear the common language of the day and needs to hear about Jesus in the common language of the day, which is for me why I use the particular translation I do, because I'm just trying to help the uneducated man, the man who's less able to maybe comprehend, less able to sit and listen to someone speaking. I want to connect with the common man of the day, and therefore we have those two values: don't pretend, don't perform, everyday language for everyday people. Now, the other thing we wanted to do today, and we're just going to try and run through a few things, a bit of our story, a bit of the Matthew House story, and then also I want to leave us as well, leave you guys hopefully with an encouragement for you out of something that God spoke to me about recently. But just going back to the Matthew House story, you know, there's in this room, there are people who have been hugely significant to this thing called Matthew House starting. You see, the power of the prophetic is in this story. Hannah said we've got that when we moved from here to Swansea. We had the now word, as it were, the prophetic word, and we had the forever word, which is the Bible, and we had both operating, and we are a prophetic people, and we believe that God can speak today, and we weigh that speaking in the now with the Bible. But here is the prophetic word that happened, which was massively significant. I won't embarrass the person particularly, because I'm not sure I've even asked them permission to share this, but they came down to Swansea with some of you guys right back in, it was in September 2013. And they felt God call them to go and walk along a road, and they came across a derelict church. And they felt God was speaking to them. And they went and they laid hands, I believe, on that church. I think they laid hands on it. They certainly prayed for it. And they believed that God was speaking to them about that building for us. And that individual, they are in this room. They wrote to me with a long word about what had happened to them. And they said, that building is enormously important for you personally, Robin. For you personally. They said that. Well, it was funny because they didn't know we were trying to buy that building. That building was falling down. It was on the sale for about 400 grand. And we'd rung up and said, we'll give you 200 quid for it. And we were laughed at. Now, we were really excited at this point. We thought, wow, we're going to get this building. It would need about £1 million worth of work done on it and all that, right? But we were doing stupid things like that at the time, just ringing out people going, we'll give you 200 quid for it. Do you want 200 quid? And so it was kind of like, oh, wow, this is really, really exciting. But nothing happened, and that was that. Then on the 10th of February 2015, I'm driving home from work, and I feel God prompt me, as best as I know, a prompting from God. I always say it's better to be an obedient fool than a wise, disobedient person. And the prompting was this: go down to that building, Robin, lay your hands on it, and pray that I'll give it to you. So I turned my car around, I'd driven already an hour, as you might have seen in that update. I live and work an hour apart. So I drove the 3 miles down to that building in the other side of Swansea City Centre, and I got out and I went to that building. I laid my hands on that building and I said, God, give me this building and give me the resources to make it a force for good and your gospel in this city. Then I got back in my car and I felt a prompting again, go back and pray again. So I went round to the other door, I looked around, it was quite dark, and I put my hands on the building and I prayed, because it's in a busy street. And I wrote it down, I thought, I won't tell anyone, because if that story comes off, it will be an awesome story, so I'll record it. But if it doesn't, I'll just take it to my grave, boom, done. 6 weeks later, we find ourselves on the other side of town. Almost an identical building, but this one has had all the work done on it already. It is a tenth cheaper than the one that I'd been laying my hands on. And that building is Matthew's house. And you might say, well, therefore, what's that got to do with it? I say, there's something significant when God prompts you and says, if you believe I could give you that building, then I'll give you infinitely more than you can ask for and imagine. And therefore, I take you back to the power of the prophetic. And that word in 2013 by a faithful person with a gift who said, that building is enormously important for you. Enormously important for you personally. And so that's part of the Matthew House story prophetic. Hannah's now just going to briefly share as well on the Matthew House story, the now word, as it were, the bit from the Bible that really was vital for us as we develop things.
So somewhere during the rather intense week that we were trying to raise the money to put a bid in for the building, God spoke very clearly to us about the story in Matthew 9, which is Matthew's testimony. And let me just read this. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. "Follow me and be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So Matthew got up and followed him. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his house as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. But when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with such scum?" When Jesus heard this, he said, "Healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do." And then he added, "Now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. For I have come not to call those who think they're righteous, but those who know they are sinners." And this was a gift to us, this story. And in fact, if you come and visit the building, so foundational has this story become that if you walk into the entrance hallway, you will see this story written up on the wall for everybody to see. Notice several things from this passage. The guests included tax collectors and disreputable sinners. So it was a bit of a mess. And that's okay. In fact, it's more than okay. And it's what the church should be like if we're to reach people for Jesus. Next, it shows us the importance of hospitality in the kingdom of God. It's Jesus' way of working. It gives us permission to be uncompromised and yet stand alongside those who are living lifestyles far away from God. And that's what Matthew's house looks like. And lastly, it frees us from the critic, because there'll be plenty of them. And it reminds us that we actually only have to please the one, Jesus himself. Okay.
Okay, so that's all right, you'll get it in the end. I'm fine, I'm only winding you up. Sorry, it's a bit bad, wasn't it? Cheeky bit of banter. Oh dear, I'll get beaten up by my family for that later. Okay. Yeah, and I'm just thinking, I was telling one of the guys out there at the in the break about how that's freed us up about who can use our building. We say, anybody can use our building. Come and receive hospitality, because we are Jesus in the building. The building isn't Jesus. The building is Matthew's house. We are Christ in the building. And therefore, it would be a privilege. I'll share a cup of coffee with anyone and be Christ in me to them. And so it's been really exciting. I just want to share a little bit about the provision as well. And I know the thing about Helen and Jared and others will be looking for provision. And there have been people in this room and people in this church who have been incredibly generous to us. There are people, I can remember one phone call I had with somebody in this church who emptied their giving account, which I thought was the coolest thing in the world to even have a giving account. I thought that was the best. I didn't have a giving account. That inspired me. But I was in tears on the M4 as they did that for what we were trying to do when we were trying to raise funds for this building. So the people in this room have been incredible. But during that week, it was an exhausting week. I've heard the story once, you know, two girls are on their way to school and they're running late, and one says to the other, "Look, should we stop and pray that we won't be late?" And the other one says, "I've got a better idea. Why don't we run and pray at the same time?" Well, raising money is a bit like that, you know. You pray, but you also run at the same time. You've got to make the phone calls. You've got to ring people. You've got to ask people. You've got to say, "I believe in what I'm doing. Can you give me some money?" And we had a crazy week of fundraising. We had we needed 80 grand to buy this building. It was dead cheap. And we had 10 grand. And so we just really worked our socks off to get money that week. And there were people in this room who have been amazing. And people since then have supported us regularly. And I'm just so grateful to you guys for that. But it was really weird. At the end of the week, we pretty much got money together. We got some of it in interest-free loans, and we got some of it in cash. And somebody rang me. I shouldn't have fiddled with that. Somebody rang me, and I didn't know who they were. And I took the number, and they asked me. I'd never met them, still haven't met them to this day. And it was a week in. I got the money together. They asked me about Matthew's house, what we were doing. And by this point, I was getting used to people giving us money. So I was becoming a bit bold. So I said to this individual, "Well, I guess you want to help us in some way. Is that right?" Because I didn't really know where else the phone call was going. And they said, "Have you got the money?" I said, "Yes, I have." And they said, "Oh, well, I was going to lend you the full amount. I was going to lend you the full amount." And I turned him down. I took his number. And I actually rang him the next day and said, "Actually, we could do with it just to kind of show we've got funds." And this couple put £75,000 in our bank account the next afternoon. We paid them back about a couple of months later. Never met them. I only know their address because I had to do it to pay them back. When I put the phone down, as best as I know how, I felt God speak to me and say, "Robin, it was never about the money. I could do it as a phone call from someone you've never met, who's not in your network of churches, who's not even in your country. He's not even near you, in 100 miles of you. I can do it like that. Don't ever think this is about the money. So we've seen in our story the God of provision. But also we've seen not only is he the God of the 80,000, but you know, the funny thing about this building was, and one of the real tragedies is, which is why the heroes and villains thing has come about, is this. The people who owned the building before had a finance director, and he nicked all the money, which is why the building went empty and all the charity collapsed and all that. And on day one, we're clearing out the building. It was a kind of one of those depressing days, really, because you suddenly get this building and it's a right mess. And you go, oh no, what have we done? And they're up in the office, and I think Darby was in the office, and they're clearing out the office. I'm downstairs. I'm getting harassed by everybody. I'm regretting the whole thing at this point. And they say to me, can you come up to the office? You've got to come up to the office. And in my head, I'm going, another decision has got to be made by Robin. This is insane. Just throw all the stuff away. But in the office, they found in cash 1% of the purchase price in a tin. And they said to me, who does that belong to? Is it the receivers and the administrators, or is it us? I said, we bought this building and everything in it, that is our money. And we kept it and we banked it. And God gave us 1% of the purchase price back on day one. On day one. And then we also have seen in moments, you know, when you're discouraged and you get a big bill, because we had a big bill at one point. And it was, I sort of knew it was coming, but when it came, it was a real kick in the teeth. And I said to God, you know, God, I just need an encouragement. And I want you to take this away. He's the God of the 80 grand. He's the God of the 1%. But I said, God, I need an encouragement. And the next day, someone started supporting us, £5 a month. But you know the thing that really frightens me? I could have missed it. I didn't need £5 a month, £60 a year. I needed £6,000. But I suddenly realized, God says, that's your encouragement. What are you going to do with that? And I suddenly realized it. And I said, Lord, I'm thankful for that small gift, which may be a massive sacrifice by someone. I'm grateful for it. So he is the God of the 8 grand. He is the God of the 1%. We often joke about the 1%. Maybe the guy didn't need the money. Maybe he was starting to forget things. And he gradually left the £1 million he stole all around the building. And over time, we're going to discover the money that he nicked. But it hasn't happened yet. We've only ever found the 1%. Anyway, and he is the God of the £5. But then there was another moment as well, and this is probably my best of all. Often I used to get snobby about people who prayed for car parking spaces. And I used to be like, what are you praying for car parking spaces for? This is the God of the universe. He's got the king, you know, he's got to advance the kingdom. Why pray for car parking spaces? I've got better things to pray for than that. I'm church planting, for goodness sake. I'm doing Matthew's house. He's the God of something else as well. You see, I love fridge milkshakes. I drank one on the way up here. It's my big treat. And at the end of that fundraising week, I was exhausted, but I knew we had to plunder our own bank account if I was asking people to give me such money. And this is silly, but I thought, I can't go up the road and get a fridge milkshake because I'm so exhausted to give me a little bit of a sugar hit. Because why can I? How could I do that? Because if I did that, well, you know, like that would be in some way, you know, we've got a gift day coming up. This would be insane. So I thought, I know what I'd do. I opened up my wallet and I had £1.34 in my wallet. And I thought, I'll walk up the co-op. And if there's a milkshake there for £1.34 or less, I'll have it. And that's okay because I believe in grace. It's a bit of a distorted view of grace, but it was there just hanging, keeping me hanging on to the kindness of God. So I went up there, £1.39. £1.39. We still hadn't got this 80 grand phone call at this point. We were still trying to raise the funds. And we were getting there. And I was on the phone to Hannah, and I said to Hannah, oh, I was walking up and down the gutter, you know, looking for 2p's and 1p's, thinking I've got to find one somewhere. They're about to find 5p. Nothing. And I said to Hannah, oh, I'm just going to have to. It was a few minutes, wasn't it, me talking. I was looking in the little self-serve one, you know, seeing if I can find 5p. It's pathetic, I know. I mean, I said to Hannah at the time, I'm asking God for 80 grand, and now I'm looking around for 5p and praying, God, would you give me 5p? And so I went, I said to her, oh, I'm just going to have to go and get something else. And I kid you not, I probably should have brought the photo of the co-op. I'm standing on the phone to Hannah, on my mobile phone, standing like this. I'm away from the tills. I'm where you would hear the money drop. And down, right down in the middle of my feet, right in the center, is 5p. I said to Hannah, that's incredible. That's incredible. Hannah goes, we're going to get this building. He's the God of the 5P. And what I realized that day, and why I mention that parking space story, is this. Pray for both. Pray in your life for 80 grand. Pray in your life for 5P. He's the God of the universe. 5P, 80 grand. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Me praying for a church plant and you praying for a parking space. When I meet the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the one who has been king over all of history, the Ancient of Days, they're both going to seem pretty small requests. And the real important thing is this, that we see in the small things and the large things in our life, that we have that attitude of gratitude, really. Because that's what I learned through this story of the provision of God. And now we're just going to kind of finish. Hannah's going to share. We're just going to talk about some of the tougher times in this sort of experience of being down in Swansea, really, and just share some of those.
We could just go on and on and on with some amazing stories, because we have got... No, we won't. We won't. But just to say that there have been times when it has been really tough as well. And so it's not... We don't want to come and just give a really distorted view about, oh, this is really amazing, this is like all fantastic. Just actually say, this has been really tough as well. We don't remember all pain that we go through, do we? But there are particular days that stick with you. And bizarrely enough, one of the first days that was really hard for us was the day that we moved out of our house. This is with the church. We were meeting in our lounge, and it's all quite convenient there. You know, the kettle on, it's all quite cozy, got the sofas, it's all quite intimate. And then we were moving out and renting a building, an old church building in the city. And I remember what should have been a landmark day for celebration. Yes, we're out. And we drove up to the building, and we'd gone to the stationery shop and bought the large plastic boxes like you do. And we filled it with tea and coffee like you do. And as we pulled up and we went through setting up and doing the meeting, we both felt utterly deflated. And it's so bizarre because it felt so wrong. We should be utterly celebrating the fact we've moved on to a new phase of the church plant. It's really beginning. And it's fascinating on reflection. We were like, why are we feeling so low? And I think for us, we just realized, this was our third church plant, how far we still had to travel and how the beginning of the setup, because when you start, you do everything. Set up, set down, put the water in the flask, do this, do that. And for us, it was just like, knowing actually, this requires effort, this requires sacrifice, this requires time, this requires energy, this is organization. And you really are the jack of all trades when you do something like that. So that was a real low day for us, which again, like I said, is weird because it should have been a real high. The second one was when we had the first people leave. People that leave is painful. It's painful whatever size you are. When you're small, you really feel it. And it can be incredibly discouraging. Also, we had people that turn up and went, we had someone turn up and go, oh, the presence of God here, this is really amazing. And you're like, yes, this is encouraging. Like, a person might come along, next week never came back, never seen them since. So you have moments like that as well, where you just think, oh, man, somebody's going to grow, and then it's like, it's not. So, so they're just like a couple of times that just stand out in terms of moments where you can just feel incredibly discouraged. Robin's going to share a couple of others.
See, you're still doing it. Oh, I'm starting to enjoy it now. That's wrong. I was just thinking, you said, you're on your own doing it. Ian, I'm with you, man. I'll help you. I'll help you pack down. Totally. Capacity is rarely grown in comfort. Seeing people saved is a messy kind of Christianity. Read the New Testament. We need to be prepared to people who are uncomfortable. It's hard work and difficult and willing to graft. And at times willing to go through those tough places. There was a moment I was driving along the M4 into work. I was pretty depressed, really. I was a down day. I'd call it a dark day. And we got the building, and that was going okay. And the hill was in a new season. And I was working in care for the family in the event job. And I just said, God, something has got to change. Something has got to change. And I went in to care for the family that day. And again, you'll see this in the little update that was sent round. But basically, I was asked then to join the senior leadership team at Care for the Family, which is a charity that I worked for 5 or 6 years at that point. And their kind of aim is to strengthen family life through marriage, parenting and bereavement. They work all over the UK. And I'm thinking, God, did you hear my prayer? That is not the prayer and the answer that I'm looking for. But again, in this room, I don't even know if they're in this room today, but somebody in this church prophesied over me before I left here that I would have a role of national influence, which I thought was quite a ridiculous prophecy, if I'm honest. But I realised that day, and if you read that story that was sent round, you'll realise in that story, and you hear it in that story, I realised that day that God has a better plan than you could ever imagine for yourself. And I want to encourage you again, hold on to the prophetic, hold on to the promises, stand on the promises of this book, because God has a better plan for our lives. If it was me, I would have answered that prayer by giving me a wadge of cash and I would have worked for the church. God said, I didn't want you to do that. And over the last few months, I met up with a guy in Newport, a friend of mine. So I've been on that leadership team of Care for the Family now for 2 years, and Matthew's house has obviously taken off, the hill's carrying on, stuff like that. Don't work for the church. And this friend of mine, you know, just getting to know him really, but he's a reasonable friend. And he sat opposite me, he's a wise guy, and he said, you know, Robin, he goes, you're doing that, and you're doing that. How are you going to be able to continue to do all those things and do them well? And I said to this guy, that's a great question, and it's a really fair question. But here's my problem. I feel, and my wise council of advisors feel, that all of those things God has called me to do, which one would you have me disobey? Which one? And I want to encourage you, if God has told you to do something, do it. It doesn't matter how painful it is. You might need to learn his ways as well as his will, but do it. You know, Paul says to the to the Ephesian elders in Acts 20, you know, guys, I'm going to Jerusalem, and I don't even know what awaits me there, but I know this, the Holy Spirit compels me to go. Ananias felt God speak to him and say, go down the straight street. I want you to speak to a guy called Paul. Ananias said, have you heard of this guy? But Ananias did it, and aren't we grateful that he did? And for us, along the way, we used to say this. We felt God speak to us many times and say, I just want you to go to the corner. I don't want you to work out what's around the corner. I want you to go to the corner. And I want to leave you with this little encouragement just to finish, really. It's in the book of Mark. And you may be familiar with the book of Mark, but I'll just kind of tell you what's been going on. Jesus has been speaking to the disciples in the crowd, and he's told them four incredible stories Mark 4. And the disciples, I'm thinking at this point, they're on the inside track, you know, so they've heard. Jesus said, this lot, they don't always understand it, but I'm going to tell you what this stuff means. And then he says to them, let's now get in these boats and cross to the other side. And for us, crossing to the other side at times has felt like this. Let's cross to the other side. Because, you see, the thing is, I've often wondered about this. The disciples didn't know where they were going when they said cross to the other side. They had a little bit of an idea of what the other side might have looked like, but they didn't know what they were going to encounter. You see, on the other side in Mark 5, they immediately encounter an aggressive, violent person who everybody else has given up hope on. And they, quite frankly, would have been out of their depth without Jesus. But Jesus knows where they're going. And he says to them, let's cross to the other side. And for us at Matthew's house, with the whole Matthew house thing and the hill, was even Swansea was, Robin and Hannah, get in the boat, let's cross to the other side. I know what's going to happen over there. In Matthew's house, let's get in the boat and cross to the other side. And maybe there's something in your life and with things you're doing, you think, oh, you know what? God has told us to get in the boat and cross to the other side. And you know what? Actually, I don't know what awaits me there, but it might not actually be something good. You might have made decisions even years ago in your life that felt like you've got in a boat and you're crossing to the other side because Jesus told you to do it. And then suddenly, if you're familiar with this story in Mark 4 is this. There's a storm suddenly comes, and you think Jesus said, get in this boat, cross to the other side, and now we're going to drown. And now we're going to drown. And if you look in this story in Mark 4, what's happening is the waves are now building up and building up, and they're coming over the boat, and the disciples are trying to bail the water out of the boat, and they're panicking. They haven't even got to where they're meant to be going. And they're thinking, Jesus told us to get in the boat and go to the other side, and now we're going to drown. And you know where Jesus is? He's asleep in the boat. He's asleep in the boat. And they wake him up, and they wake up Jesus, and they say, don't you care that we're going to drown? Don't you care that we're going to drown? And then Jesus does what only Jesus can do. He turns and speaks to the sea and the wind, and he says, be quiet, be still, and it's calm. And then they get to the other side, and there's still tough stuff coming. A few weeks ago, I was pretty disheartened, discouraged. I was tired of being ill or whatever. And I was just like, and I said to Anna, you know, I just need Jesus to speak to me. I just need Jesus to speak to me. And I know no better place for a quick word from Jesus than the Bible. So I went to this passage and I looked at this passage and I felt God speak to me. He spoke to me for me. He spoke to me for what we're doing. And I think he's going to speak to some of you here. I often think, you know, why did Jesus tell the wind and the waves to be still? Was it to save them from drowning? Or was it so that he could speak to them about why they had so little faith? I think it was so that they could properly hear him. I don't think Jesus wanted to shout the whole message to them. You know, I imagine they woke him up and were shouting with all the waves and the noise. I think he thought, oh, I can be doing without this. So he made it quiet. He made it quiet. They were focused on their circumstances. And they made one fundamental mistake. And it is the heart of Mark's gospel. You see it running all the way through Mark's gospel. Jesus is the Son of God. They had God in the boat. They were never going to drown. Never. At the end of this story, if you're familiar with it, when he quietens the wind and the rain, the disciples say, who is this? Who is this? God was in the boat, and they failed to realize. And Jesus, for me, when I looked at that passage and felt him speak, said, Robin, I'm in the boat. We're going to, I'm in the boat. God's not going to drown. And he's not going to let the boat go under. And therefore, the real challenge for you, Robin, is not your circumstances and the storm and all the challenges and your discouragement and all that. The real thing is this, is to continue to look at me, Robin, and say, who is this in the boat with you? You might think and feel that I'm asleep, but I am in the boat with you. And so my encouragement to you and to us is this. Never, ever lose sight of the identity of Jesus and the presence of Jesus in your life. Because even when the final storm comes on your life, and it will happen to us all as certain as taxes, when it happens, you will not drown. You will find that you have crossed to the other side and you are still with Jesus. And I want to encourage you, because I am certain there are people in this room with storms raging and you can barely hear yourself speak and you feel like God is asleep. But that's the key bit. It's God. Asleep. God. Jesus, the Son of God. The demons saw it in Mark 5. The Roman centurion saw it. And Mark's gospel is all about it because it begins by saying this is the good news of Jesus, the Son of God. And remember this then. When you're in those moments, He is in the boat with you. And for that reason, we can be massively encouraged and know that we are not going to drown. And I pray with all my heart that that is an encouragement to you guys, both here in your circumstances and as a church as well.